Welcome to a special edition of the Marketplace Roundtable podcast featuring Jay Mintzmyer of Value Investor's Edge. Jay first began contributing to Seeking Alpha in 2011, building up a large following through his work covering shipping stocks, probably about as comprehensively as they're covered anywhere online or in print. Since 2015, Jay has run the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. The service offers intensive coverage of deep value opportunities in the shipping, energy, MLP, and industrial sectors. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. And now your host, Jay Mintzmyer.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another iteration of Value Investor's Edge Live. We're recording on the morning of June 10th, 2021 at about 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We're hosting the CEO of TORM, Jakob Mildgaard, who will discuss the product tanker markets as well as TORM's unique positioning in the market, their scrubber program, potential forward environmental regulations, and other interesting dynamics of this market. This interview should be relevant to anyone with considerations in the product tanker or crude tanker spaces. So we're definitely excited to have TORM with us this morning. Jakob, good morning. Thank you. I guess good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we jump into the questions, just a reminder for everyone on the line today or listening to recording later, nothing here constitutes official company guidance or investment recommendations of any form. I do have investments in the crude and product tanker space. Those disclosures in more detail will be updated with the recording when it's posted. Just keep that in mind. And again, this recording is happening on the morning of 10 June. 2021. Jakob, again, welcome. We want to jump right into it and talk about the current state of the product tanker markets. It was kind of a boom and bust, if you will, right? Last year was a lot of fun for some investors and speculators in the market. We've had a lot of pain since last fall. What's the state of the market? Have we passed the worst? Is the worst behind us, or is there more volatility yet to come?
Yeah, well, I agree that it was quite a ride that we've been on. This year, 2021, has been very much a kind of a flat feeling, that the market has had a few bounces, a little volatility. I think we are around the bottom of the market. And then the big question is, of course, okay, what is there to come? I think we're not really seeing any clear signs of the market fundamentally turning for us. What I am following with interest is obviously what is the state of the consumers. I mean, it's what is going to drive demand for refined products is ultimately consumer behavior. And when I look at as of the fundamentals of the crisis that we've been through, it's very unusual. Consumers have never been in such a good state. If we take, for instance, in the U.S., the average level of income over the past 12 months when we've been through this pandemic is 10% above the pre-virus level. But at the same time, people have really been stuck in their homes, stuck in a situation where movements have been heavily restricted. So thinking about that and moving forward, then I must admit that it does feel as if we're teed up for a dramatic step up in demand, simply due to the nature of the economic state of consumers. And it goes for all sectors, whether it's, I want to say, secondary cars or used cars in the US. I'm sure you follow that, where prices are increasing by 20 to 40% because there's simply increased demand, whether it's on, if you look at the airspace, where we are still globally hovering at 30 to 40% below pre-crisis level in terms of daily flights, that is, in our opinion, actually boding really well for the coming demand in the second half of the year. Of course, with differences regionally in the world, Asia currently lacking somewhat. Europe, the US, more advanced in the rollout of vaccinations and therefore more advanced in the reopening back to normality. But when you got back to normality, I think it's very much V-shaped demand. And that is what we are baking into our supply demand forecast for the product tanker segment.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense. We have to look at the end user demand, whether or not it's gasoline or it's diesel or it's jet fuel. It sounds like looking around it, I'm a little biased because I'm US based, but looking around it at the driving volumes and the gasoline sales throughput in the US in particular, but also in Europe, gasoline sales are looking pretty good. But as you mentioned, jet fuel is still significantly lagging. The air traffic volumes haven't came up. Is that kind of the swing factor for folks to watch? Is that perhaps something people can say, hey, product tankers are going to turn around when air travel is back to 9,500%? Is that something people can look at, or are there other stuff as well?
I think obviously it's a combination of several factors, but clearly jet fuel is a component of the underlying demand, and as you allude to, we are not back to normality. I can say in my own case, I've not been on an airplane since February of last year. I have booked my first ticket. That would be early July, but I've not, in that sense, spent any per capita on jet fuel as of yet. But it's coming here in the second half. I'm not sure that isolated is the driver. I think it's a number of components that all has to do with mobility. And clearly, as societies at large reopen, then the demand for gasoline, the demand for jet fuel, etc., will increase from the current levels at a global level. And then, of course, sort of looking back at the market being relatively in the lower quartile of what we would want, where we would want the market to be. There's something good that's come out of it is that actually the depletion of stock, whether it's the stock of products that were floating storage or whether it's onshore, that has either been diminishing on when you look at the on vessel storage, so the vessels on water that is simply just storing refined oil, that has come back all the way back to the normal level. And also globally, the onshore stock of refined products is back to 5-year average, or even in certain instances below. So once you've got this V-shaped recovery going for you, there's not that much headwind. I think one of the big headwinds currently is that there is cannibalization taking place between crude tankers and product tankers, simply because that in the crude tanker space, the recovery in demand for transportation of crude has been lacking the pace that we would like. And that means that in a lot of instances, the maiden voyage for VLCCs, for Suezmaxes, even for Afras, have been transportation of refined products from Asia back into the Western Hemisphere. And I think that is another component in sort of what we need to have flushed out, is that demand needs to come back on crude itself. You know, once OPEC reopens gradually here, that will sort of flush out more demand for VLCCs. That will lead them to no longer cannibalize in our sector. And that will lead to an increased demand, even, you know, with the same amount of volumes in the refined space being moved, just from the mere fact that you've got this spillover effect that crude tankers will stay in their own space. So I think there's something on the demand, and then there's this structural cannibalization from crude tankers that is affecting the market. And we need to see both these elements to come back to a normal pattern before we will see a real step up in the freight rate.
Yeah, I think that certainly makes sense, and I appreciate the color and getting into a little bit of the cannibalization and the trade-off between those new build tankers. I know there's also a factor of LR2s, right, switching over basically the Aframax component, right, and switching back and forth between clean and dirty fuels. Historically, there's been a pretty heavy correlation between product tanker markets and crude tanker markets. Right, they're both markets are either doing very well or both markets are doing very poor, and they tend to track closely. This time around, so far, it looks like product tankers are picking up a little bit faster. Do you think that correlation is going to hold, or do you think there's going to be a disconnect between the product and crude markets going forward in the next, you know, year or two?
I think if we take the longer view, then I would subscribe to that these two markets are closely interlinked, as you also described. Right? I think that in this instance, there is a chance that product tankers will sort of stay relatively stronger for some time. But I think without the assistance of the sister segment here of the crude tankers, you know, we cannot do it on our own. We need to lift both these markets before you got a real recovery going. That's my personal instinct. Of course, we don't know how to. I don't think that we sort of have a breakaway here where product tankers in its own right can sort of be at an elevated level without also crude tankers faring better. That's not. I think that can happen in the short term, you know, maybe a few quarters, but year on year, I don't think that's the base case.
Right. There's a natural balancing mechanism, right? Where if the product tanker market was very strong, then you're going to see a lot of those dirty LR2s clean up and come back into the market and balance it off. So I think, you know, for investors and especially for traders, it's a relevant question because I think sort of the emerging, I guess, sophisticated trader viewpoint on some of these markets is that product is going to move first and they're kind of hopscotching, right? We've done container ships, you know, now it's dry bulk and then is it product tankers next and then it's crude later, or do they both move at the same time? And, you know, in reality, we're obviously not going to know until hindsight, but it's just an interesting discussion to have, right? And it sounds like you're saying you could have one or two quarters where product tankers move first, but you absolutely have to have the follow through on the crude side. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that is fundamentally, at least with the knowledge at hand right now, that's how we see it in the coming years.
Certainly. So it's been a tough, you know, 6, 8, 9 months here in the tanker sector, but it looks like, you know, we're about to hit the turnaround here in a few months. What are the main risk factors that could set us back? I mean, obviously, you know, another COVID flare up would be bad, but is there anything else that could be a risk factor here that could set us back?
Well, then it would be a hard stop on the consumer behavior side, which I personally, you know, if I sort of take myself and the people that I'm close to as a proxy for the general behavior, then I think we're all keen to get back to the pre-COVID situation, i.e. that you can socialize, that you can travel. Of course, if there is a setback in that, or that for some reason the global economy comes to a halt, I personally subscribe to quite a bullish case. If I look around, I think that GDP, you know, if you look at the US, you know, GDP will be within this year at levels above what it was pre-COVID-19. So I think this has been a health crisis, not an economic crisis. And I think that's really important to remember when we also think about underlying demand for products. So, and you know, it's difficult for me to point at other things than a real flaring up of a serious pandemic, which I obviously really hope for all of us that is not the case. And I don't see a lot of other things in the short to medium term that would be significantly negative for our demand picture. And on the supply side, you know, the fact that shipyards have been, signing contracts almost every week on large container vessels. It's taking away a lot of the capacity that is sort of the tier one yards, where you would also build our type of vessels for the next couple of years. So we really also have a helping hand in the underlying supply demand fundamentals for product tankers from the fact that currently the container market is red hot, and we are seeing most of the liner companies either directly on their own balance sheet or indirectly via other financial vehicles ordering heavily into the space, leading to a backlog which puts you easily into 2024 before you can get new vessels in the product tanker space, and at elevated prices, because two things have happened. Steel prices have gone up with this sort of current boom for commodities. And again, the demand from shipyards to produce has also. So we believe that shipyard prices easily have moved up another 10% over the last quarter for vessels in our segment, which will also hold back. So the lead time before you get delivery, and then also the sort of price hike that is there, leads to definitely a less incentive, clearly less incentive for investors to go and order new ships currently.
Yeah, it's certainly something we're watching. We're very excited, I think, about the supply side. It's just a question of whether or not the demand can live up to its potential. And I think it's, as investors and traders, it's important, as you mentioned, to continue to watch the level of reopening, the pace of reopening, the level of air travel, the level of global GDP, economic production, and economic throughput, and so forth. So we're hoping that the demand lives up to the picture. And if it does, it looks like we're set for a much improved, as you mentioned, second half of 2021. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about upcoming environmental regulations, because with the increasing focus on ESG and other environmental aspects, this is something we definitely need to commit some time to. So there's 2023 EEXI regulations on the table. So let's talk about those. Also, there's a proposed tonnage tax on the table that could add a significant amount of money to the bunker fuel cost. So how do these potential proposals and the EEXI framework, how does that impact TORM, and what sort of initiatives are you taking to prepare for those?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right that in the coming years that there will be an increased level of regulation around the environmental footprint around CO2 emissions from our fleet as well as the broader industry. We've looked in detail into the EEXI framework and what would be the consequences for our fleet, and I must admit that as we see it, and we've looked back. Looking at our data for the last 3 years, looked at our historical speed and what could be the regulation on sort of the engine power, which is this EEXI. We don't really believe that this EEXI will have any impact on TORM nor on the broader supply of ships. So for quite a lot of reasons, I don't think that is something which is, I think that's going to be an historic picture. When we look at it 5 years from now, that's going to be more or less a non-event because everybody is operating their fleets well below what is the potential output under that regime. The other things that we do believe will have an impact is potentially the CII, which is coming, and it's potentially, of course, if you have an emission trading scheme and you have a taxation on CO2, that can change the picture, and that can have a further significant cuts into the supply of ships, or alternatively, obviously, what is the ultimately the service speed, which is economically most feasible. But I think at least for the product tanker space at large, unfortunately, you can say we don't think that there's going to be a big dynamic effect from the current regulations set for 2023 into the space. I think it's a little later with the CII that we could see if there is ambitious targets on that being set by the IMO, that could have a bigger impact.
It's certainly something we need to keep watching. And of course, it's still a year and a half out from the very start of that regulation. And of course, the regulation phases in, right, based on your special survey timing. So it's not like January 1st, 23, things change. It's kind of a rolling implementation, right? So, but it's definitely something to watch for the middle of this decade. You participate in a pretty massive scrubber investment program a couple of years ago to comply with IMO 2020 and benefit from some of that. How have the economics been on that scrubber investment program, and how does it look now? Is there any desire to add a few scrubbers, or are you done with that program?
Yeah, so we have that's a good question. So as you said, we already in 2019 prepared for this new regulation by making investments totally around $100 million into retrofitting scrubbers on about 60-65% of our fleet. So in nominal terms, around 50 to 55 vessels will have this by the end of the year. So far, the payback time with the already sort of savings that we've had, it looks to be around 4 years for that investment, which in a historic context of shipping is pretty good. But of course, which if you look back at the early part of 2020 and sort of the very wide spread between very low sulfur fuel oil and heavy fuel oil, then it looks like a long payback time. But you know, we feel very comfortable with that investment. Looking at installing additional scrubbers, you know, we are a bit further down the line now. We are mid 2021. If you were to plan it, it's probably going to be early part of next year. So I think it's going to be really a very selective approach if we were to make further installments. I think it's going to be very much on the margin if we make that decisions. We're very happy with what we had done. Most of those installations were done last year, a few this year. And as I say, payback time for around 4 years for the $100 million that we have put into those installations.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty healthy payback period, especially if you can consider that the spread is likely to maintain at least at some level for the next decade and perpetually for that vessel's lifetime. Kind of on a related note, are you hedging any of that fuel spread savings, or are you just kind of taking the spread that the market gives you?
So far, we've decided a strategy to that we cannot anticipate the spread, and of course, you know, so we have no hedges in place. And you can say, well, if you'd done it, as I say, early part of 2020, you would have been in a much better position. If you had done it, let's say, third or fourth quarter last year, and when demand was down and an absolute price of a barrel of oil was down, then it would have been, you know, a terrible decision to make it. So I think we just, for now, just played in the market. And yeah, we're quite happy and content with that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, your special area of focus is product tankers, product tanker transport. Once you start getting to fuel derivatives, you're getting out of your lane a little bit. So
I'm sure there's a lot of money to be made and lost in that. And we're trying to sort of, keep our toes out of that territory for now.
Certainly understand. I imagine that if the spread was, you know, significantly larger, then you might consider, you know, locking in some guaranteed cash flow. But at the current levels, it's about $120 a ton. So hopefully it'll go up a little bit for you, but we'll see what happens later in the year. So you've added a few vessels to the fleet. You added some new builds, and you also added a nice little addition of secondary tonnage. Given the fact that new builds are higher priced, it takes a little longer to deliver, but also given the fact that the secondary tonnage is much more expensive, what area looks best for buyers now? What area are you focused on, or are you even interested in adding vessels at this point?
Well, that's a very good question. But we've been quite active in this space. We've added, over the last 6 months, we've added a total of 13 vessels that are on the water. So some of them have not come into our fleet yet, but the predominant part has, and they will all have come in by August of this year, I expect. And if you then ask me what could be next, it's quite a moving target. We've seen asset prices, as I mentioned, go up, obviously for two reasons. One, that the replacement cost of a new build has gone up, but also the scrap price, steel prices have gone up. So the back end of your curve has also risen. So that means that actually the asset valuation for most vessels, not only in product tankers, but across the broader shipping space, have actually sort of, the curve have lifted itself both in the front end and the back end. Irrespective of the earnings currently being in the lower quartile of historically. So what is then the right move? I think we're still bullish about the market. So we would be willing to expand our fleet, but of course we need to be, careful in sense of not entering the market with on the wrong foot by buying too high. So I think that the sort of the deal we did with the Team Tankers, where we used our currency, i.e. our listing in the US and in Copenhagen, to issue stock for 40% of the purchase price, and then 60% was in cash, where we raised debt associated with that. I think that's a good formula for us to think forward around how a fleet expansion could look. And it's a little neutral, because if you do that on a NAV basis based upon our own fleet prices, and you then issue stock, as you of course know well, then we're not really paying below or above the market. We're simply just lifting our leverage by doing that time of transaction. So my instinct would be that actually all of the vessel classes, LR2, LR1, MRs, would fit well with doing that type of transaction. If you then move into a pure cash transaction, I think it depends on the day, to be honest, and the specific deal, which one currently would make most sense.
Yeah, definitely a trade-off. And if your stock trades to a premium, which right now it's in the neighborhood of NAV, it's not the premiums that we would hope to see, right, as investors. But if it trades at a premium, it just opens your toolbox a lot more. There's a lot more opportunities to grow the fleet accretively and build an even bigger long-term profile for investors. You know, it's really an unfortunate situation when shipping companies trade at a discount to NAV, because then you're kind of stuck and you can't really grow the fleet, and the only thing you can do is repurchases. And of course, you know, in your situation, you have a smaller float because you have a very strong legacy private equity holder. So a little bit of a pivot on that note, since I mentioned the legacy private equity holder and the thinner float, you're dual listed, right, in Copenhagen and also in the United States. The U.S. trading float is very thin. Is there any strategy or potential or something you can do to improve that trading float and liquidity on the U.S. exchange?
I think we'll keep doing exactly the things that we are currently with you, you know, to get our name out and to get our the audience on the U.S. platform, as you point to get it broader. Have even more analyst coverage, etc. And then I also believe that over time there will be opportunities to utilize actively the platform. It has actually increased quite significantly, just building upon the fact that we are a very well-known name in the product tanker space, that actually the float and the increase in the number of shares traded in TORM has actually been, a lot of the growth has actually been in the US rather than in Copenhagen. So we're seeing that when there is a buildup in the average volume, the average 30-day moving average of our volume of stock, that the buildup is actually predominantly in the US rather than in Denmark. And I think that's, we just have to keep going at that and keep offering our services to investors by, for instance, this call.
Certainly, certainly. Yeah, it helps to get out there and tell your story a little bit more, especially in the more like retail trader centric space. I know whenever product tankers come up, everyone always is aware of it and very familiar with, for example, Scorpio Tankers. On the crude tanker space, everybody is very familiar, for example, with Frontline. It's important and helpful both for your company, but also for investors in your company to have that awareness and to understand that TORM is actually one of the largest global players in the public markets as well. So we look forward to seeing some of that. Let's talk a little bit aspirationally about 2022 and what your capital allocation priorities will be in 2022 if, big caveat, if we do see a recovery in the product tanker markets. If we see that recovery, we see positive free cash flow, what are the priorities? Are we going to see more repurchases? Are we going to see some vessel sales? Is there a potential for dividends? What sort of things should investors be hoping for?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And we're hopefully very clear on that our distribution policy is that on a semi-annual basis, we pay back to shareholders 50%, up to 50% of the net profit for that half year in question. That is also what we did last year. We had a bumper first half, and we paid dividend exactly to the tune of 50%. Of course, it could be a balancing, depending on where our shares are traded, that you distribute ultimately via dividend and or also share repurchases. My instinct is that actually we would probably, if I look at it now, we would probably lean towards that it's the same philosophy, so a dividend payout. If the markets improve like we expected, I think what we did last spring, first half of the year, was actually we sold off about 10% of our fleet. We sold 8 vessels during the course of the first half. So we were quite active, and I think you would probably directionally see the same, that either we try to capitalize by taking term contracts for part of our fleet and or to sell off assets if you have appreciation of asset prices. But coming back to your question then, you know, distribution, 50% stays on the platform, 50% to shareholders. It could be, of course, a mix between the dividend and share repurchases. I think directionally, I would anticipate that it's more dividend than it's share repurchases, also because of what you pointed to, that we got a majority shareholder holding more than 70%. It's kind of not really very constructive if you want to build more trading volume to be buying back your own stock.
Yeah, so it certainly makes sense. And of course, you would want to do the repurchases if your stock was trading at a big discount to NAV. But if times are good in the market and we're seeing dividends and we're seeing strong cash flows, then that's less likely to happen. Usually we talk about repurchases when times are bad, right, in the market. And
exactly.
Don't want to join the sector. Is there a potential to, with your other shareholder, is there a potential to do some sort of tender offer or something where you could, you know, potentially remove some of that overhang and some of those shares without actually impacting share liquidity? Is that a feasible avenue?
It could be. It's not something that we are strategically considering at this juncture.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense. You wouldn't expect any sort of share transactions in this market at this time. It's just as we look around the space at a lot of your peers in the sector, maybe not so much product tankers, but across the shipping space, we're seeing a lot of private equity exits and sales as they reach the kind of the end of their investment lifetime. So it's just something, I guess, to keep in mind for investors. Keep in mind there is, an overhang there in some regards. And in some ways, it's positive, right? They've been supportive investors, but in some ways, it's also something to consider going forward into next year and beyond. We did have one question in our chat that I wanted to circle back on and make sure we address this. There was a question about the changing geography of some of the refining capacities and some of the trade flows. Is this going to be a tailwind for the product tanker sector, or is this a potential headwind? How do you view the shifting refinery landscape?
Well, that's an excellent question, and thanks for bringing that up. So, I think I've been sort of in this sector for more than 10 years now, and even when I started, sort of the dislocation of the refinery sector and the movement away from developed economies into closer to the source, i.e., Middle East, was a narrative that's been used multiple times, I'm sure. And it's not really taking off. You've not seen that many closures of older refineries. You've not really seen that the landscape on the refining side has really dramatically altered. But that has actually come with COVID-19 coinciding with that the acceleration of closures have actually come. We've seen quite a number of closures, whether it's Australia, South Africa, US West Coast. There's numerous examples of capacity being closed down in already net short regions of refined products. So you're sort of increasing the net of imports that you need to make into those regions. And that is clearly a tailwind for our sector. And instead of having a picture of that is what will potentially happen, now we're actually seeing it, and we're seeing an increase in demand on ton-mile basis because of this restructuring. And that I also believe that in our current freight rate environment, where we are experiencing that product tankers are faring on a relative basis better than the cousins in the crude tanker space, that I think that structurally this is also to do with that we're already seeing this increased ton-mile demand in those regions where you've had closures over the past 12 months.
Excellent. So as we wrap up our call today, Jakob, I appreciate you joining us. I just wanted to ask you big picture, you know, what differentiates TORM from your product tanker peers? There's a lot of stocks investors can pick from on the U.S. exchanges, you know, six or seven of them. Why should investors choose TORM as their choice? What differentiates you and makes you superior to your peers?
Well, I think we have obviously a very professional crowd, as you point to in this sector. I think if, as an investor, what I were thinking about is where is my capital sort of getting the best returns? And when we look at that metrics, which is ultimately, in my opinion, sort of more important than the number of shares or the number of ships or the average age, et cetera, I think at the end of the day, it's about return on invested capital. And when we look at that, we feel very comfortable with the outperformance that we are generating with all the small bits and pieces that we do on a daily basis on our integrated platform. But ultimately, the reason to look our way would be that we deliver best-in-class return on invested capital.
Excellent. Thank you, Jakob. I appreciate you joining us today. I think the investors on the line and on the recording later are going to take a lot away, both from the product tanker sector overall, but also about TORM. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks. Have a great day.
This concludes another iteration of Value Investors Edge Live. We just hosted Jakob Meldgaard, CEO of TORM PLC. They are listed both on the Copenhagen Exchange as well as the U.S. Exchange, stock symbol TRMD. As a reminder, nothing on the call today constitutes official company guidance or investment recommendations in any form. I have investments in a few other crude and product tanker stocks. Those disclosures will be updated in more detail along with this recording. This recording took place on the morning of June 10th, 2021 at about 9 a.m. Eastern Time.